women of this country, Mr. Randolph, pledge to you, to Martin Luther King, Roy Wilkins, and all of you fighting for civil liberties. We will kneel in, we will sit in until we can eat in any counter in the United States.
There were three women who spoke at the March on Washington in 1963. One of those women was Daisy Bates. The University of Arkansas will host a screening of the documentary Daisy Bates, the First Lady of Little Rock, Thursday afternoon inside the Reynolds Center Auditorium. Yesterday, I spoke to the director of the documentary, Sharon LaCruz. She says as someone who studied the civil rights movement, had lived in the South, and had worked as a reporter, she wondered why she had never heard of Daisy Bates until seeing footage of her speaking at the March on Washington.
One of the reasons I did the film is because I was curious as to why Daisy Bates got lost out of the national history. And what I found out was one of the reasons why is that she really kind of came out of nowhere to lead this fight in 57 in Arkansas. And even Arkansas itself was not a state that people even expected to have any problems desegregating the schools. So the NAACP was also looking in another direction in 57. And when, you know, things went south and the governor decided to put the National Guards outside, then the NAACP had to suddenly kind of organize themselves, and Daisy Bates was already on the ground there. And so I think from the beginning, she was not chosen to be the leader of this movement, and I think she didn't fit what people considered was leadership material at that time. She's a woman. She's African-American. She's self-educated, which for people in Arkansas at that time, she's just considered uneducated. And she wasn't connected to any of the churches very closely. She wasn't a member in the community in ways that people expected. Plus, usually religious leaders at that time were the leaders in the community. So I think because she didn't fit, and she didn't have the demeanor of a Rosa Parks, who was a perfect, you know, person to be the symbol of the civil rights movement. I think because of that, when the stories were starting to be told later on, it was kind of easy to kind of dismiss her probably by historians and other people as being just a fluke. And so I think that's part of it. I think also what happened to her is she started to become ill very young. At about 54, she started having her first strokes. And I think that probably later in life, when she could have promoted herself more and helped put herself on the map nationally, once historians were revisiting the civil rights movement and retelling those stories, she just wasn't part of that dialogue because she really couldn't speak as well as she was, you know, she could speak in the beginning. So I think a lot of those things played into her being left out of the story.
And you said she probably didn't set out on purpose to become sort of this leader, and this wasn't who they were looking for. Do you find it, or do you think people were more surprised by the fact that this leader was an African-American or the fact that she was a woman?
I think people were really surprised that Daisy Bates, you know, became the voice of this fight to desegregate Central High School. I think there's certain people in the black community that already knew about her and her husband, L.C. Bates, because they ran the state press, and they were considered at that time kind of a radical because of the articles they were printing in the press. But again, for the power brokers in Arkansas, the African-American men, they, you know, even though at that time she's head of the NAACP, I don't think they would have looked to her as being a leader, and they wouldn't have chosen her as to be a leader. So I think all of the above. I think being female it's very odd at that time because the role women played in the 50s was definitely not of a leader. And to have her in front of the television cameras at that time was highly unusual for African Americans and then for females. And probably at that time, most people would have seen maybe Lena Horne on television if they did at all as an entertainer, but you wouldn't have seen an African American giving press conferences. It was just so beyond anybody's expectations of what African American women would be expected to be doing at that time.
Now, how long did you work on this documentary?
I worked on the film for about 7 years. I came across the idea to do the film in 97, And then I wasted a lot of time trying to make the decision how to do the film, if I could even do the film. So I didn't even make it to Arkansas and start reaching out to people until 2004. So I really count 2004 till the present, because that's my first trip to Arkansas was in 2004. And that's when I seriously took the plunge and decided I'm going to do this film, and I started filming.
Now, Daisy Bates had passed away by that time. Did you find did you find it difficult to find people to interview? I mean, especially since the story wasn't exactly well known, were you concerned that you were going to have trouble finding people still alive to tell the story?
No, no. I think the hardest part, having her passed away, it was a little difficult because I didn't know who her relatives were, or as African-Americans say, who your people are. That part was a little bit complicated because of the fact that her mother had been murdered and her father had abandoned her when she was a baby. So that part was a little bit more complicated. But overall, I knew that all the Little Rock Nine were still alive. And just from my initial conversations with people like Betsy Jakaway, and other historians, I knew who was available in the community who I could talk to. And each person introduced me to a new person. They would say, oh, this was Daisy Bates' neighbor. This was Daisy, you know. One of the people I wish I had gotten to interview was Rufus King, who was Daisy Bates' preacher. She didn't go to church a lot, but when she did, she went to Rufus King's church. And unfortunately, by the time I started the film, he was already very ill and had passed away before I could even film him. But he would have been a really interesting person. But by and large, I had a really easy time finding people, because people were also really excited about the project, and they were happy to help me, even though I'm coming from New York as an outsider. But they were very trusting of me that I would tell her story fairly. So they were happy to introduce me to, you know, whoever they could think of. This is her lawyer. This person stayed at her house, or this was somebody she mentored. So I actually had a lot of people to choose from to interview, and I had to kind of whittle it down to the ones I really, really needed to make it into the film.
What's the most surprising thing that you learned about Daisy Bates during your research?
Wow. There's a lot of things I found surprising. I mean, I was surprised that when I first came to Arkansas in 2004, she was in an unmarked grave. And she had been there from 99 all the way until about 2007. She was in an unmarked grave. And that really shocked me. I just didn't expect that. And the story behind that is so complicated and convoluted, that requires another film. But it totally fits in with how her life goes. The other stuff I found surprising at first is I didn't realize at the time that she wasn't always married to her husband, that she had been his mistress first, because that's so radical. Again, in that time period, you don't really expect that. There are things like that I didn't expect. I originally went into it expecting her to be like Saint Daisy, and I found out she was a much more complicated woman, and people had a lot of very complicated feelings about her, and that she was as loved as she was hated by people, depending on who you talk to. So that I didn't expect. I thought everybody was just like, you know, thought she was a saint like I did when I first arrived there. And instead I found somebody a lot more complicated.
You originally did this documentary because you were curious about this person that you had uncovered and who'd been not well known throughout your civil rights education. Why do you feel that this is someone that people should be better acquainted with her story?
I think because I think Daisy Bates' story on a lot of levels is such a American story. I think she is a heroine because of the fight she waged on many levels, not just because of the fight to desegregate Central High School, which ultimately did impact the overall civil rights movement, but the fight she and her husband waged to educate the black community in Little Rock in the 40s. Not just Little Rock, because they had a wide readership. So even beyond Arkansas, I was told that African-Americans were reading their paper. So And into the 60s when she was protesting with students outside of Woolworths and stuff. I think she is this incredible woman that, for me, I just find it, the things that she was able to accomplish in her life and the fights that she fought and the energies that she put in it and the sacrifices she made make her worthy of people knowing about her as a community activist, because I think she's inspirational in what she was willing to sacrifice and do for her community. I think knowing about her as someone who believed in education and was willing to risk, and they risked a lot, her husband and her, to get the Little Rock Nine into Central High School. I think that love of education is something that we need to emphasize and promote and not take for granted because of the fight that they waged. And she, yeah, I think her life story of a woman who came from nothing, who had lost everything, was basically orphaned as a baby and was able to make a way for herself and rechannel all this rage and anger that she had as a young person to become, you know, to be at the forefront of a movement to desegregate Central High. I think that story is inspirational. And, you know, I'm hoping that when young adults in particular watch the film, that they'll be inspired by Daisy Bates's life, because Daisy Bates's life is the classic example that life really is like 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you handle it. Just that is definitely how she lived her life, because she is someone who had many options as far as a path she could have went down, considering where she came from and what she went through. And she made a decision to do good with her, you know, with her life instead of going another way. So I'm hoping that she'll be inspirational to young adults and they'll appreciate the access they have to education now in comparison to the Little Rock Nine in 57.
Sharon LaCruz is the director and producer of the documentary Daisy Bates, The First Lady of Little Rock, and I spoke to her yesterday. A screening of her film is scheduled for 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon inside the Donald W. Reynolds Center Auditorium on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. Sharon LaCruz will be on hand to participate in a question and answer session following the screening.